This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over the final. The last episode of Four Weddings and a Funeral X, a.k.a. Part 10. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready?
For one dry kiss. Are you ready for this? Yes, we are ready for this kiss.
Ooh.
Four Weddings and a Funeral, episode 10, the final episode, and we are stoked to be bringing it in to the spoiler mega happy ending. And welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one rom-com movie or series. And right now, like I said, Four Weddings and a Funeral, episode 10, final episode. I am here with my co-host who brings the beauty of fog into my life, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Fog? Did you say fog?
Okay, I'm doing another one. I am here with my co-host who... If we ever had a moment of bestie betrayal, and we have had a moment of bestie betrayal in our relationship, secrets, we would make amends and have the hard conversations. Thank you very much, Miss Tamara Cosio.
You have to leave that fog thing in there.
Oh, I will.
That is one of the most obscure and my favorite thing you said so far. And I am here with my grand finale of a friend. Ooh. And I say that because she's going to be with me till the end.
Yeah.
Corinne Edding.
Woohoo.
Grand finale, just like this grand finale of Four Weddings and a Funeral. Are you guys ready? Are you excited? Are you as excited as we are?
My heart is going a pitter patter and I'm ready.
I think I cried 4 times during this episode. Not the recording that we're about to do, but the final episode of Four Weddings and a Funeral.
You didn't cry into the future. That's good.
No, they know we have like our little conversations before we actually press record. So I'm like, it's Corinne, true. Why are you being so mean to me?
I cried several times throughout this episode as well. Not the Four Weddings and a Funeral TV series episode, not as well as the one that we're recording right now. You know, speaking of tears and cleansing and whatnot, I thought we're heading into fall.
Mm-hmm.
Symbolic of, you know, letting go things that don't serve you. But also, it's like really grounded with growth and whatnot. And pumpkins, squash, beets, you know.
Fallen leaves.
Exactly.
Mold. And decay.
I think we should set some intentions for the new season. And
Okay.
So, I'm going to say, may we listen to our heart, follow our instincts, and let go of the things that don't serve us so we can welcome a cornucopia, fall-like, of abundance of all the good things into our life.
Mm-hmm.
In this new season, we are welcoming environments and people that bring out our softness, and we are letting go of environments that bring out our survival in the name of fall, crunching leaves, and crisp, beautiful days. May it be so.
Putting a little more pumpkin spice in our life.
Amen.
I love autumn, but Larry, so funny. He went to the Walgreens to get himself an ace bandage because he yoinked his wrist when he was lifting weights. And so he's like, I'll run over to the store really quick.
Yeah.
He was gone for a little longer than I expected because it's just on the corner. And he came back with like an armful of Halloween treats and decorations. And I was like, it's not even October, Larry. And he's like, I know, but are you mad? I'm like, absolutely not.
I know you're a Halloweeny girl.
Oh, so Halloweeny. He got me cute little like apothecary potion bottles.
Aww.
And then he got me like a little like mini tombstone with the skeleton peeking out from behind it. And then pumpkin bat and ghosty string lights.
Oh,
And I was like, I'm going to wait to put them up. I'm going to wait to put them up. I'm going to wait to put, okay, I'll wait to put the lights up. I'll wait to put the lights up. I'll wait to put the lights up.
I wouldn't wait to put the lights up. It's September. It's time. It's time. I love that about Larry, though. Like, he does some thoughtful things for you that are not only thoughtful, but they actually take into consideration who you are as a person.
I know. Imagine that.
Instead of being like, hey, I got you something from my favorite football team.
I got you reggae tickets to the fest that lasts 7 hours. Right. That did actually happen. True story. And I thought I was going to literally like get into a car accident just to make the music stop. Because not only did we listen to reggae music for 7 hours, but my ex and his best friend listened to reggae music on the way home from the reggae festival that we listened to reggae for 7 hours at.
You got to pregame and postgame the reggae.
Oh, dear God, make it stop. Make it stop. Oh, I think I've probably mentioned that 7 hour reggae fest like 5 times on this podcast because I'm still scarred.
This is the first time I think I'm hearing it, but you know.
It's absolutely not the first time you're hearing it, I guarantee it.
7 hours of reggae is a lot. 7 hours of any kind of music is a lot.
Mm-hmm. Especially when it's blaring loudly at you. So,
gentle listeners, her ex liked to listen to music so that you could feel the vibrations of all of the notes in your body.
Mm-hmm. I think he might have been partially deaf because he just liked things at high decibels all over the place. Loud was his default setting.
Yeah, yeah. I know that I like things quiet, and I know people like things louder than I listen to things, which is totally mm-hmm. understandable, 100%. And, you mm-hmm. know, you like to jam to some loud music, totally understandable. But he took it into a dimensional level. It was pretty incredible.
I am dog sitting right now.
That's so exciting.
A cutie patootie little dachshund named Fife. And we were taking Fife on a walk around the neighborhood. And when we're walking down the street, I was like, man, I don't think me and Larry have said anything for like a half a block. And I'm okay with that. It's a comfortable silence that just like struck me where I was like, it's something seems different. What is it?
Hey, I need to fill all silence with all my words. We'll never have silence between us.
So I guess I should probably tell our gentle listeners why I kersploded my life. So Corinne.
Yes.
You know how I said I threw a grenade in my life and it kersploded?
Why, yes. I seem to remember something like that happening.
Because you've been in it real time with me for the last few weeks. That's why you remember it. That's why it sounds familiar.
Oh, that's why. Okay.
Or perhaps that explains why you've got that glazed over look in your eyes every time I try to talk to you seriously about what's going on with me. So, gentle listeners, and Corinne, because apparently this is the first time she's hearing this, I quit my job. Yep. The one that I've gone on and on about in previous episodes and had issues and problems with.
Yeah.
I had enough, so I said when. And which is why the My Favorite Murder, What Are You Even Doing Right Now? Little mm-hmm. snippet that I mentioned a few episodes ago really resonated with me. So I'm not going to get into any details because I am still in the rough with this separation, which is
wrapping things up,
which I really don't need. I should not be. It should have been a clean break. I should have been out the door, but there is little trendles of just whatever holding on to me that will not let me leave, and not in a good way. So yep, I had no backup plan. I had some prospects, but none of them really serious or concrete, and it's the first time I've ever done this in my life.
Yeah,
which is fucking terrifying, but mm-hmm. they always say you can't get to a different place in your life if you continue to do the same things you were doing before.
Yeah.
Which it resonated with me because they always say if you want different in your life, you have to do different, which is why I kind of took this approach. And I've told Corinne and I've told a lot of people in my life that my default setting is to freak the fuck out. Mm-hmm. Usually I'm like thinking of every bad and wrong scenario that could possibly happen. oh my God, if I go to the store and I don't pick up milk, I'm going to get hit by a rhinoceros on the I-5. Those are where my thoughts go, generally speaking.
Well, that's just facts, okay? So
yeah,
we just need to put that one aside.
But I, for some reason, I just feel filled with the sense of peace and that everything's going to work out and be okay, which is just
nice.
Foreign to me. I still don't know why. I still don't know where it's coming from, but I have a deep sense deep inside of me that everything's going to be okay. So it really feels like I'm doing the right thing.
And I've always encouraged her to burn it all down. So,
and I did, in my own way, I left on a good note, or tried to.
Yes.
I was just like, thanks for everything. Goodbye.
Yeah. You know, I just meant just say, okay, I'm done here, you know, and that's it. And you did. You did say, okay, I'm done here.
I did.
Which I was like, I left. Yeah.
And he said, sign this paperwork. And I said, fuck you. And then he said, you're not going to get this then. And then I'm almost like, can I see that really quick? And then I left anyways.
Yeah. So I am so proud of you for doing this big thing. And I am not really a leap and the net will follow kind of person, because I just think that's kind of bullshit, that that's for like privileged people for the most part. But I do think that you have the kind of job where to get another job, it's not just putting out your resume. You need to have your visual portfolio full of graphics and art that you created looking a very specific way. And that takes a lot of time. And, you know, when you're not only working a full-time job, but one that is grinding you down on top of it, how are you supposed to get the look and feel of your portfolio right? You know, it's just...
Where are you supposed to pull inspiration from? Your ass.
Yeah.
And everything will reflect that, because it'll look like ass.
Hey, I've got an ample ass, so I can share some inspiration with you if you want any butt pic.
Nice.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Gladly take it. I think the best part of my... I don't think I'm talking smack by saying this, but the way that my former boss operated is... On my last day, I gave him a month's notice so I could find and train my replacement. He was like, we're not going to do that. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. It's your choice. I'm not going to be here to see how that pans out, but whatever.
He's like, we don't need you. Okay, sure, Jan.
So on my last day, when I was planning on having a nice leisurely lunch with my coworkers that I was going to miss and cleaning out my desk and office, he called me at 9 o'clock in the morning and said, hey, I'm sending over our web design guy. So can you just like real quick teach him how to use all the equipment that you use? And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? You want me to teach him how to use all of these things in Hulk? I'll do my best. So poor web design guy came over and I explained how things were going with him, and God bless him, because he's a good egg. And he was just like, you know, I'm just glad it worked out this way, because when I don't know what the hell I'm doing, it's not on me, it's on him, because he sent me here on the last day. And I was like, touche. But then he also was going through a list of emails that I hadn't gotten to because just time. And one of the emails was from one of the center managers that said, can you make me a logo for this company and organization? I was like, okay. I go, so this is one of the things that I didn't get to. And he's like, wait, that's all they gave you? I was like, yeah. He goes, that's how they communicate with you?
Yeah.
I need a logo? Uh-huh. And you just come up with stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I saw the color drain from his face. And then I showed him like the sketches I came up with. He's like, you're really creative. And I was like, you have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. You're fantastic.
Yeah. I was like, that was very validating, because you don't hear it from your higher ups. But when you hear it from the guy you're training that's going, I can't do this, I can't do what you do, it's, you know, it's a little pat on myself. Like, what's the word I'm looking for? It's affirming. Yeah. It's very affirming.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, because my mom was like, well, you know, she needs to be careful with her boss man because recommendation. And I was like, she works with people from multiple different centers and doing stuff for them. I was like, she has a lot of other people that she can tap into for recommendations, because she's really good at what she does and she has a really good turnaround time. So I was like, I think that she will be able to get her references. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'm so fucking proud of you for doing the big thing. And gentle listeners, if you have any fantastic graphic design jobs that are opportunities that you know about, please share with us at onedrykiss@gmail.com, because Tamara is a fucking delight. She is hilarious, creative, talented, a fantastic artist, and she's all that in a bag of chips. She's the whole package and more. So
thanks.
Woo!
Glad I got that off my chest.
Yay! Now that you got that off your chest, you want to get something else off of your chest?
This bra?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that's not what you're talking about.
I already got my bra off my chest. Boom, 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 boom. I'm cool with taking a bra break if you want to just, like, whip it on off. But I was thinking more about the synopsis, episode 9.
Oh, my goodness.
As I said, Tam, it's less synopsis of 4 weddings and a funeral. Bring it on home.
I gotta bring it on home because it's gonna be homework, because a lot of shit happened in the last episode, as you all will know.
Uh-huh.
If you're there with us, y'all will know. Okay, I'll try to wrap it up in less than 3 pages. Just kidding. Synopsis. Cash and Maya finally get together. Like, you know, get together.
That dance. Whoop.
They're emboldened and confident that their relationship will work, so Maya gets to the busyness of telling Ainsley about their relationship. At least she tries to tell Ainsley a couple of times. But Ainsley is either crying over Bryce, who happened to overhear her talking shit about him because of his age and unrefinedness, etc., etc., and he wants nothing to do with her now, or she's on her way out for a date to theoretically get over Bryce. Needless to say, Maya doesn't get around to it and continues sneaking out with Cash until one night, Gemma sees them kissing in the street and rushes to tell her new bestie, Duffy. I say Duffy's her bestie because they're spending a whole hell of a lot of time together and enjoying it. And in her haste, Duffy mistakenly thinks she's confessing her feelings for him, and he says he feels the same way, too. And initially, Gemma thinks, wrong, until, wait, what did you say? She lets it sink in and realizes she has feelings for him, too.
Aww.
And they finally get together.
And it feels so good.
Meanwhile, Ainsley ultimately makes a sweet show of affection to Bryce by decorating his patio, which wins him over, and they're finally on track towards love.
Ooh.
Then there's Tony and Andrew, who get together, then break up, because Tony, too, admits he's an illegal immigrant, and Andrew's about to vote for an anti-immigrant bill. Andrew tries to rectify the situation by proposing marriage to T2, a.k.a. Tony 2, and T2 says that will only work if Andrew can marry all of us, a.k.a. all illegal immigrants. So, in turn, Andrew crushes the anti-immigrant bill with his singular vote. And because of this, Tony, too, finally thinks that Andrew might be the one.
Ooh.
Finally, Ainsley calls everyone over to her house to try and talk Maya out of moving to New York to pursue her dream job at a nonprofit. But Ainsley's APB text is cryptic, and the rest of the Fab Four, or I guess it's a Fab Five now because Gemma's part of the crew, think Ainsley knows about Maya and Cash. All the friends rush over and accidentally spill the beans about Maya and Cash's relationship, which causes Ainsley to turn on Maya and scream that she never wants to see her former bestie again.
Ooh.
And all the other Fab Five follow suit in solidarity, and Maya's biggest fear is realized because she lost all her friends and then vows never to see Cash again.
Bow, 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 bow. And Corinne has real problems with all of Maya's friends and Ainsley's friends turning their back on her specifically. Just saying.
I know. Well, that's a... That... In the... I can't speak of it unless, lest I spoil what's going to happen in this episode. But Corinne, let's not wait any further. Will you jump in to episode 10 and bring this series home for us?
Choo-choo, I'm on the train, I'm bringing it home. Are you ready for some Four Weddings and a Funeral, episode 10? Yes. Yes, we are. And so we're bringing it on home with our final episode of Four Weddings and a Funeral. So Cash, who is now very single and very unemployed, auditions for Henry IV, part one. And one of the people casting it tells him that he had a great audition, which that's big in itself. Mm-hmm. Always a good sign. Then we move to my favorite part, where the TV show Four Weddings and a Funeral cribs from the movie Notting Hill and shows the passage of time of about a year as he walks down the street through a variety of seasons. And we get to see Fatima pregnant and then later Fatima with a baby. We also see Asif hitting on a variety of girls. Oh, Asif. And ultimately, we land on Cash passing a giant poster that has some guy, sorry guy, I have no idea what your name is, Eddie Redmayne and Cash all looking hot and grubby with the title Henry IV Part 1 underneath their beautiful mugs.
Oh, the invitations of it all is what Corinne labeled this next section. And in Ainsley's interior decorating shop, we see her flipping through different invitation after different invitation to announce her and Bryce's wedding, and she's super frustrated. I used up my best wedding ideas on Cash, and now I'm going to be stuck doing some pedestrian country core wedding in a barn with bench seating and mason glasses? Ugh! Bryce Thrice tries to appease her. Doesn't matter where or how we get married, as long as, and Ainsley finishes his sentence, Cash sees the announcement in the paper and is wildly jealous. Bryce looks at her, and Ainsley course corrects. I'm kidding. I mean, we'll be together forever, obviously. She gets up from her chair and hugs him as he sultrily says, "That's right, you little psycho." Next, we see another wedding invite. Tony to an Andrew? Wait. Oh. It's not a wedding invite. Even better. It's an invite to Tony 2's citizenship party.
Yay!
Which is super great that he applied for and was granted citizenship. Who's at the party? Amongst other people, Craig and Zara, who now have a baby and a really positive relationship with Craig's older daughter and her mom, Julia. Ainsley and Thrice Bryce, Obbs, and Duffy, Gemma, and Giles. Duffy has been having a ton of sleepovers at Gemma's, but sneaks out in the morning and then knocks on the door to, surprise, just happens to visit them for breakfast. At the party, Ainsley asks Gemma if she can send an invite to Duffy and Gemma, but Gemma says no. Giles doesn't know about us, and it's only been a year since his father died. Ainsley glances over at Giles. Are you sure he doesn't know? He's pretty smart. He showed me how to turn off the flashlight on my phone. And with that, Gemma is set to reflect on whether she should make an official announcement to Giles about her relationship to Duffy.
Well, you know, if somebody teaches you how to use the flashlight on your phone.
Fucking genius. Oh, my God.
Brilliant.
Meanwhile, Duffy and Andrew are talking, and Andrew asks, "Oh, how's Maya doing? I hear she's running for office." Duffy says pointedly, "Well, I don't have anything to do with her since she made her ultimate move of bestie betrayal. But," he lowers his voice and excitedly whispers, "I did read on Facebook that she's running for state assembly, which is so cool because she used to write speeches for other people to say, and now she finally has the chance to say them herself." Andrew smiles warmly. "Ah, self-motivated grab for power. Maybe I did have an effect on her."
Ainsley completely chaps my hide in this way. I 100% understand her not wanting to be friends with Maya and having issues with that. But she should not be dictating who her friends are friends with.
Yeah.
That's just bananas. And I am not here for that. Let people choose their friendships however they want. And I might say something if I feel like you're being particularly specifically used by somebody or something like that. But Maya's had a generally positive relationship with everybody. And the Ainsley thing happened. Yeah, it's sucky. And no, don't invite like the two of them to the same party together. But their mutual friends can still be friends with her.
Yeah. And even so, like so much time has passed that you would think it's been a year, girl.
Yeah.
Take your clamps out of your posse and move on.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I understand them potentially, like, maybe leaving the house in support of Ainsley, like, when she does the initial, yeah. like, oh, I found out, that- blah, blah, blah. Like, what that, yeah, that's fine. But, like, come on. I probably would have been, like, hanging behind and being like, okay, tell me what's going on. But at minimum, I would have been, like, out in my car being like, hey, tell me what's going on the phone. Talking to Maya, yeah.
It's so funny that you say that, because that's what I was initially, like, referring to in the beginning. When they left her at the last episode, it was out of solidarity. Like, you done fucked up, girl. That's totally yeah. dirty what you just did. But then it would be like time would pass and then things would kind of, like, rectify themselves, yeah. whatever. Totally reminds me of, oh, surprise, surprise, Vanderpump Rules. Because everybody there fucks over everybody else or sleeps with everybody else's boyfriend or girlfriend behind their back. And then guess what? They all come back together eventually.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And sometimes, as opposed to this show, I'm like, you guys should not be friends.
Yeah.
You guys
yeah.
should not come. Honestly, I would just be like, let's let bygones be bygones. This is the 17th time in 2 years that I'm not talking to you for all the, like,
for,
things
for really
that you've done.
Good reasons. Yeah.
Right, right. Really good reasons, but still.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Duffy has been stalking Maya on Facebook because he does not have the balls to be friends with her, but he still cares about her and what's going on with her life.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all may wonder, what is really going on with Maya, you know?
Yeah. And yeah. honestly, I thought Craig would come around because Craig was friends with Cash mm-hmm. behind Ainsley's back.
Yep.
And was like, he's my friend and I don't care. You're going to have to just deal with it. And yeah. yet he's being hypocritical with Maya having a relationship with the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So in New York City, Maya is giving a speech. And that's why a vote for me is a vote for change. Suddenly, a wadded ball of paper hits her in the face, stopping her speech as she exclaims, dude, what the hell? And we see who she's talking to. Marcus!
This was a hell of a reveal. This was a hell of a reveal.
Seriously! All of her friends ditch out on her, but the person who she has an antagonistic working relationship with actually shows up for her?
Right.
What kind of friends are you, people? What kind of friends are you?
I wonder if he just got fired by Andrew and he just went over there because he needed a job. Because Andrew said he was going to fire him and keep Maya. But yeah. since she was leaving, he kept his job, quote unquote. But mm-hmm. maybe that was just a, you know, precursor of what was to come.
Yeah, a gap stop measure. Marcus has traveled overseas to help run her campaign and also to apparently throw pieces of paper at her when she comes off as disingenuous. He replies, seriously, Maya, that was a garbage speech. Maya sighs, when I hired you, I thought you'd kiss my ass like you did to Andrew. Marcus shakes his head. Do you want me to kiss your ass or do you want to win? Maya sighs, I don't know. Do you really think I can win? Marcus looks at her and responds, I would not have flown across the ocean if I didn't believe in you and think you could win. Maya responds, you told me you only came to America because your ex-girlfriend wanted to marry you? No! Why does it say marry you?
I was like, didn't she say murder you?
Yes! It autocorrected from murder to marry! What the hell, man? Fucking autocorrect.
A common mishap. We would like to cordially invite you to the murder of Ainsley and Bryce.
Ainsley, you really mean a lot to me. So much so. Will you murder me? Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Gives a whole new meaning to till death do you part.
Seriously. Oh,
yeah. I didn't correct it because I saw that and I was like, I thought that she said murder, but maybe I just misheard. Okay.
No.
We could be wrong.
No. This is because of autocorrect was like, oh no, we don't use the M word.
Ugh.
Yes, we do. We use the M word here. We may not be a murder podcast, but we talk about murder and we're going to be talking about it a whole hell of a lot more with, like, Purple Dahlia or whatever the fuck we're doing next.
You are so wrong, Corinne. This was your choice of series. Do I come into this mess and go, and we're here to talk about 66 weddings and 2.5 funerals. Wait, no, that's not right. What is it again? 9 weddings? It's, whatever. 4 weddings and a funeral.
Only one funeral. See, mine is like a real picker-upper. Something. Yeah, mine is a real something. Okay.
Right. Good argument. Can't, thank you. Can't say anything against that because I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Marcus's ex-girlfriend actually wanted to murder him, and Marcus pish-poshes this. Whatever, I'm your very own personal Karl Rove. This sent me on a Google trip, I gotta tell you. Maya balks, I told you to stop saying that. That is not the vibe of my campaign. But Marcus forges on. Steve Bannon, Roger Stone, whatever. And I say, yes, Marcus, let's double down with people who have had charges against them in various court cases and have legit cases against them for being corrupt, lying, and exploiting systems. Sounds like a great idea, right? Am I right?
No.
I had to look up all those people because I was like, I kind of know who some of these people are, but let me just do a little clickety, clickety, clickety.
And I came across those names and said, I have no idea who those people are, but I know Corinne's going to go on a deep Google dive and tell me at the end.
Like, Karl Rove is the least of the he like tripled and quadrupled down with Steve Bannon and Roger Stone. So, but Karl Rove was the campaign manager of, he helped George W. Bush and George Bush get elected in a variety of capacities, which is like, meh. But Steve Bannon and Roger Stone are like bad. Yeah.
Okay. It's like video games, effervescent drinks. What was that noise?
That's like the temperature gaze going up higher and higher
into
the red line. The Red Line? Huh? Okay. Remember that movie? Maybe we should do that again for a second time.
I don't remember Red Line. I refuse to speak of it.
And then I say reflexively, Maya, why did you hire Marcus? I guess it's better the devil you know than the devil you don't. Marcus shifts the topic. You know, there's a guy at my gym who's interested in dating you. But Maya turns him down. She's not interested in dating anyone. The only thing she's interested in is mending her relationship with Ainsley. And she does this by sending her letters, which Ainsley ignores.
Letters via snail mail.
Mm-hmm.
That means you care when you handwrite a letter.
Absolutely.
And put it in an envelope and address it and lick it and stamp it and send it off.
Oh, an envelope?
Envelope. And make sure you put your address in the right spot. Because last time I had to send a letter, forgot apparently in the many years I haven't sent anything, and put myself as the addressee and the person I was sending it to as the addresser and got it promptly sent back to me.
I've had that happen once as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good times. Good times.
Mailing things. It's a dangerous sport. Anywho, in London, Cash is smashing, not in the sexy way, his role in Henry IV Part 1. His dad and Asif are proud of him, but we find out that he hasn't been in contact with Maya, so she has no idea of his success. Doesn't she, though? Unless, like any other person with an unrequited love, she properly checks up on him online. We all know she does that. We
mm-hmm.
all do it.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the play, Cash gets a knock on his dressing room door, and Fatima, who's left 4 times during his play's performance that evening to pump breast milk, and Bashir, who fell asleep almost immediately in the warm theater because his baby only sleeps 12 hours a night. That is not a typo. The baby only sleeps 12 hours a night. Only 12. Anyways, both of them are there to congratulate Cash after sharing their excuses for not really watching the play. But their ulterior motive is, surprise, they're trying to set up Cash with a co-worker friend of Fatima's. They literally ditch Cash, leaving behind Tanya 1, we don't know her name yet, but that is it. Her name is Tanya, to chat with the surprised Cash.
I just called her Tanya 1 because it was Tony 1 and Tony 2 and Tony 3.
Oh! Oh, I thought later on in the episode her name was revealed.
We never reveal her name. Sorry. So I just, for all intents and purposes, if we were doing the Tonys numbered, I figured we would do a Tanya for the female version.
And here I was going, oh, her name's Tanya. Oh, Tanya what? Oh, there must be another Tanya later on in the episode that I just... Wow. Ooh, tough week. Sorry about that. Meanwhile, somebody else is getting set up across the pond. Maya! Woohoo! I think Marcus finally persuaded her to go out with Tony 4, whose name we also don't know, but why not tack another Tony onto this show that we got going on? I don't think there's enough.
We actually kind of technically do, because he mentioned it at the gym, but I didn't want to rewind back, and then he doesn't mention it till much later, and I was just like, yeah, Tony 4, it's better this way.
And as Maya approaches him at a very nice restaurant, the same time Cash is approaching Tanya 1 at a restaurant in London, and we see both dates' introductory conversations, which make it very clear that Tanya 1 and Tony 4 are better suited for each other, even though they live in totally different countries, and Maya and Cash both confess to thinking nostalgically of their exes, aka each other, which compels Tanya 1 and Tony 4 both to make excuses to leave the date because, yikes, Maya and Cash are clearly not over their most recent ex relationships.
Yeah, you know it's bad when you know more about the person's ex than you do about the person you're on a date with, and I've had that experience, so.
Yeah. Yes.
And while I don't know if Maya has been following Cash online, she has been following her other love, Ainsley. Or rather, Ainsley's maid, because Ainsley blocked her on all social media platforms. I personally would have made a fake account to follow Ainsley with, but Maya hasn't been taking my advice throughout the entire series. So why should she start now?
I know, Maya, do you hear us? Maya, do you hear us?
Maya, why don't you listen? Yes, no, I don't understand why this happens, but, you know, whatever. Maya and I aren't as close as I thought we were. That's okay.
And by close, you mean have no relationship at all?
Yes, because she's fictional.
Just clarifying.
Yes. Maya sees a pic of Ainsley hugging her maid, Ursula, and Ursula has captioned the photo, "My good boss gave me her old shirts."
Wow, Ainsley, how benevolent, huh?
Although I am not one to pass up a freebie when I have people who I'm working for who are like, here, do you want this thing? I'm like, no, yes, give me, thank you.
Gentle listeners, I must make it known that Corinne, on the occasion, will be thumbing through a brochure of the Gorsuch
catalog. Yeah.
Gorsuch catalog at work, and sends me some choice fashions that are in excess of thousands of dollars with commentary. Tam, you see this paisley and plaid vest set with parachute pants? I totally think you should rock this at your next job interview.
Yes, yes. Because I'm a friend. I'm a giver.
All I'm saying is perhaps Ursula got those thousand dollar gorsh whatever shirts.
Yes.
And maybe she was like, this shit's hideous, but I can turn around and sell it and fund a really nice vacation for me and my kids.
Oh, man, that Gorsuch catalog from the rich person who worked in our building before us it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yes. Oh, whenever I see Corinne sent an image, I'm like, what fucking treasures has she sent me over today?
I'm glad that you get enjoyment out of the Gorsuch catalog pictures as well.
As much for the atrocious fashion that I would never wear, I get as much enjoyment as your commentary. You're like, do you want a night on the town with Larry? Well, have I got a look for you? And I'm just like, oh, dear God, no. You could not pay me $3,000 to wear that thing.
That's good, because the outfit is $6,000. So, you know.
Oh, sorry. $3,000 was just the top. You didn't see that the bottoms were separate and more expensive.
Yeah. So Maya is looking at the picture of Ursula, who at this point in time is not kitted out in Gorsuch clothing, but Tamara and I have come to an agreement. That's because she's actually going to be selling it because she's a smarty. However, in the picture, Maya sees an engagement ring on Ainsley's finger and gives Craig, who is currently coaching his older daughter's soccer practice, a call. When he answers the phone, she quickly says, "Craig, it's Maya. Don't hang up on me." Craig sighs as a crew of elementary school-aged kids chased after the soccer ball like a school of fish behind him. He says, "You know I'm not supposed to be talking to you." See, that's what really bugs me. "You know I'm not supposed to be talking to you." Like, seriously, come on now.
Just for added drama, Corinne, I don't think this would happen in real life.
Maya says, "I know, but I just have to know. Did Ainsley get engaged?" And Craig fills her in on how Thrice Bryce proposed by hiding the ring in some dessert, but Ainsley threw it away before he got the chance to give it to her because she was on a diet. Oh, isn't that classic Ainsley?
Classic Ainsley.
He also says, "You know, Ainsley wouldn't admit this, but I know she misses you. Her engagement party is this weekend, and I'm certain there's a part of her that wishes that you were there." So after Maya gets off the phone with Craig, she tells Marcus, because she's in her office, that, "I've got to go to London." And I say, "I don't know, Maya. That doesn't seem like a good idea to me. I'm just saying this all. Like, are you planning on crashing her engagement party? Because that's not good. That's not good. But maybe you should bring Cash as a date with you to the engagement party. We'll see how that goes over."
Oh, Maya, do you have that much disposable income and 10 hours to spare? Because that's how long it would take you to get on that flight to London and back.
For true love, it's worth it.
Oh, yeah, but does it work out? Way to reserve judgment until I see you, but the answer is no. At Ainsley and Thrice Bryce's engagement party, Craig and Andrew discover they have absolutely nothing to say to each other. Duffy gets a call from his mom, and apparently there's something very bad going on with her medically, and so he's leaving immediately for New Jersey. He lets Gemma know before he goes and tells her that he'll call her as soon as he lands. And Gemma shares with Ainsley about seeing Cash's play poster when she ducked into the tube to avoid a frenemy. Ainsley scoffs, and Bryce Thrice, who is making a drink nearby, hears Ainsley say, "Oh my gosh, can you believe how he looks in the picture? The way he has his head craned, like, I'm a serious actor. Ugh." Ainsley is derisive as fuck towards him, and I get her being bitter and wounded about being left at the altar, but I speak very little on dates about the ex who lived in my apartment non-consensually for a year after I broke up with him, and that was prolonged trauma. That was from Corinne, not me.
Yes. I did write that comment because it's just like, okay, you've got a silver fox that has a fuck ton of money and you're talking about Cash still? Come on.
I honestly think her hang-up with Cash has as much to do with her jilted relationship with Maya. That she's experienced so much loss because of both of them that she's equally pissed at the two, but like hones in on Cash because that's the only one that's like blatantly in front of her and spoken about.
Right. I think that's because, I think that's a great.
Nobody else talks about Maya.
Yeah. We don't talk about Maya. No. Yeah.
Bryce, however, gets the pleasure of hearing about Cash, I think at minimum once a week, but I think it's more likely at least once a day. "Hey, Ains, I was reading this news story." "Yes, Bryce, you know what is news? Cash did me dirty. That's what's news." Or, "Hey, Ains, I was thinking we might go to Acapulco for the honeymoon." "I don't know, Bryce. Cash and I had a great trip planned, but we never got to take it." Or, "Hey, Ains, thinking about buying a ticket on a private spaceship." "Sure, Bryce, but it really sends me to the moon when I think about Cash." That was an imaginary conversation between the two, courtesy of Corinne's banner writing. Thank you, Corinne.
You're welcome. My imagination is vivid.
So needless to say, that evening when Ainsley's getting ready for bed, she notices that Bryce Thrice is not. He's just sitting on the edge of the bed looking pensively off into the distance. When she asks him what's wrong, Bryce answers, "You're obsessed with Cash. You talk about him all the time. Even the other week when we were getting a couple's massage. Ainsley scoffs. I did not. And I was only saying that Cash doesn't like massages because he thinks they're transactional and bougie. But Bryce has had enough. Who cares? Ever since we've been planning this wedding, you want to make sure that everything is better than what you had with him. Ainsley is indignant. He ruined my life. And Corinne's like, really? I think someone needs to take a look at the woman in the mirror. Bryce responds, well, now he's ruining mine. And I love you, but I don't want to be married to someone who's clearly still hung up on her ex. I'm spending the night at my place. And he picks up his jacket and heads out the door in a huff.
In a huff. And I do not blame him. And I know that I made up those imagined conversations between them. But you know that's what was like kept on happening throughout. Not those exact things, but you know, throughout the thing. She would find some way to tie something into Cash. And it'd just be like, oh, really? Jeez.
Yeah. That was a problem that Larry and I had when we've not even a problem. It was just like something that happened frequently between us because he was with his prior girlfriend or lived with her for 6 years. And I was with Dan for 20 years.
Yeah.
So we'd frequently just be like, oh, blankety blank used to do this. And oh, blankety blank used to do that. But we always kind of like, it was more informative, not like, oh my God, like obsessive.
Yeah.
Except for one time when he was, I think the one time I snapped at him was when he's like, oh, my ex used to keep the Tupperware drawers like really organized and cleaned up and she had everything stacked according to size. And
fuck, I'm
like,
right off. Yeah.
You know who else could do that, Mary? You can get right up on in there and organize it yourself. How about that? And he actually did. And it's been nice ever since.
Good.
So I was like, if you like it and you thought it was better that way, then you go on and get in there and do it. And he did. And we have a nice organized Tupperware drawer.
Fantastic. And then it's easier to take care of. But yes, good going, Larry. And also, yeah, no, there's a difference but just between informative stuff and what our friend Ainsley was doing there. And when she's like, he ruined my life, I'm like, what is wrong with your life? You have a successful business. You have a loyal employee. You have a fucking hot ass rich fiance.
You have all your besties who are at your beck and call and will stop talking to their other bestie because of you.
You have your own fucking house, Tamara. Like, you know.
This bitch needs to shut up. No, I'm just kidding.
Like, I'm sorry. I understand that it super sucked that you got dumped at the altar. 100%. Go see a therapist and also talk about it with your friends. And sometimes talk about it with your current boyfriend. But sweet sassy molassie, woman, your life is not ruined. A moment in time was ruined. Something that you thought was going to be was ruined. Absolutely. But not your life.
And then guess what? Your life seems to be much better, except for one glaring thing than losing your bestie.
Mm-hmm.
But everything seemed to fall into place because of that moment where you were left at the altar.
And she's like way more empowered and in charge of herself than she previously was.
Yes. Give me some Ainsley energy for me and my life right now.
Yes.
except for the non-gratitude portion. Yeah. I don't need that. I want to be full in myself, in a better place.
The boss bitch Ainsley boss, energy.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. That's good. Let's go that way.
Yeah. Boss bitch Ainsley energy for the win. A few moments later, after Bryce Thrice has left, there is a knock on the door. And she flings it open, exclaiming, well, that was fast. And then her face falls because it's Maya. She was smart enough not to crash the engagement party, thank goodness, but did want to try and reconnect with Ainsley and show that she's there for her. And she does it by taking a reference from that horrible holiday movie that Tamara and a lot of other people really likes that I can't remember the title of.
She will do a deep dive on some randomly named people in this series, but she will not go back and figure out what the name of that ill-begotten Christmas movie is because she doesn't want to.
I was in the middle of writing notes trying to get them out to you. What's it called?
I knew you would know the answer.
Love Actually.
I did not.
Love
I did
Actually.
Not think that you would be able to. I'm not saying that you wouldn't have been able to tell me who Karl Rove and all those people were, but I thought that the odds of you knowing the title of the movie versus Karl Rove and all those people were higher. Just saying.
I not only know the movie, I know the whole beginning sequence. You know, sometimes when I figure I'm down, I go to Heathrow Airport and see the arrivals.
Wow. Let me just get my popcorn and we'll do some ODK theater.
No, let's finish this series first.
Okay. I think we Love Actually. In that movie, there's a creepy best friend of some chick's husband. Keira Knightley's husband's best friend comes to the door and gives Keira Knightley a theoretically romantic message, but it's just fucking creepy as fuck. Speaking of bestie betrayal, what the fuck was that about? That'd be... Ugh. Anyways, but in this movie or show, Maya is holding up large sheets of paper that say, Ainsley, say there's carolers at the door. No, she doesn't say that part. she said, Ainsley, flip. When I say flip, she's just dropping a piece of paper and revealing another one. Mm-hmm. Who is the best girl in the world? Flip. I know our relationship is over. Flip. But I miss you. Flip. Maya's looking very earnestly at Ainsley during this entire thing, and Ainsley has tears streaming down her face, as I'm sure Maya does as well. So, but I miss you. Flip. I miss this. Flip. And there's a pic of the two of them drinking together. Flip. And even this. Flip. And there's a pic of Maya passed out and Ainsley, who has drawn a Sharpie mustache on her face. Thank you for never doing that to me. And I just wanted to know, Flip, I am so happy for you, Flip. And I love you, Flip. Now I will stop writing letters. Both women have tears streaming down their face and Ainsley sobs. I can't. Maya begs her. Please, Ainsley, I miss you so much. I want to make this right. Ainsley shakes her head and slams the door on her. Wow, okay. Maya, having done all that she can to try and make things right, throws away her moving pieces of paper and heads to the airport. But before she leaves, she sees a full-size poster of Cash advertising Henry IV Part 1. And she smiles fondly before heading into the cab to go to the aeropuerto.
I just realized the reason why I've never done that to you, Corinne, is usually people get their faces drawn on when they're like drunk off their asses mm-hmm. and don't feel it. Therefore, you don't drink and I can't do it for you because you'd probably like bat my hand away.
Oh, you know I would. Mm-hmm. I'd be like,
back to the story. Maya boards her plane to New York, and it's one of those super jam-packed planes with two seats on each side and four seats in the middle. Mm. Maya sits down in the four-seat middle row, but is fortunate enough to have an aisle seat. Then, much to her surprise, she hears her name. Looks up, and it's Duffy, ooh, who happens to have a seat in the middle of her four-seater row she's in. She exclaims, Duffy, oh my gosh, what are you doing here? Why are you going to New York? The gentleman in between the two offers, would you like to switch seats so you two can talk? Maya excitedly agrees, but Duffy refuses and explains, we're not supposed to be talking because she betrayed a mutual friend and now our entire friend group isn't talking to her, so no. Duffy turns for a moment, looking stiffly forward, but just can't help himself and leans towards Maya. But to answer your question, my mom's sick again. Maya reaches her hand over to Duffy and across the poor guy who just wants to move out of the middle as she expresses her sincere condolences. And Duffy explains, I don't think she's doing well. She was joking around a lot over the phone, and she only does that when things are bad. Maya asks, will Gemma be able to come out? The man in the middle says, seriously, I can move. And Duffy immediately shifts away, insisting, nope, we're not talking. But once again, can't resist the urge for more than a moment when he shifts back towards Maya and talks across the man in the middle. Saying, I want her to come, but when I told her she didn't offer, and she's not even calling me her boyfriend, so who knows? The man in the middle has had enough. I'm gonna go, and you know what? I don't even need to make up an excuse. This is very annoying. He gets up and moves into the aisle, and Maya shifts over into his seat, giving him two bonuses, because he's literally not caught in between their convo, and also just scored himself an aisle seat on an international flight. Whoop, whoop.
Maya looks earnestly at Duffy and suggests he ask Gemma to come to the States. I've been stalking your Insta stories and you two look so happy together.
Aww.
You even picked nits out of Giles' hair when he had lice.
Ugh.
But Duffy, poor, poor Duffy, responds, I don't know. I don't want to push her into anything and I'm about to be gone for who knows how long. I'm thinking of letting things fizzle out.
Oh.
Maya smacks Duffy's arm. Don't do that. For the first time, you're thinking about someone other than yourself, and you're even wearing socks that don't come in a bulk pack from Costco. You're thinking of pushing her away because you're afraid of getting hurt, but how well did that work out for us? Duffy looks at her sheepishly. I got hurt anyways. Maya continues, exactly, and you need to tell her how you feel.
Yeah.
Duffy has stepped out of the hospital room after visiting his mom to call Gemma. He confesses to her, I'm not sure how long I'm going to be over here, and we may not be super serious, but I was super serious about you. And I know I could let this all fizzle out, but I don't want our relationship to fizzle out. He pauses a moment and then admits, I love you, Gemma. There is silence on the other end of the phone. Not what you want to hear when you tell somebody that you love them.
Yes.
And he asks, are you there? Gemma squeaks out a soft, yes. But says nothing else. So Duffy pulls a Corinne and says rapidly, okay, well, great chat. You just let me know your thoughts in an email and I'll talk to you later. He hangs up the phone, knowing what will be, but feeling hella vulnerable. The next day, he's sitting next to his mom's hospital bed, sighing in an oh-so-Duffy way as she reads her book. She glances over at him. What's wrong? Duffy says, nothing. I'm fine. She turns back to her book, but a couple of Duffy sighs later, she closes her book and confronts him. Seriously, what's wrong? I'm trying to finish this book before I die, and your sighs are pulling me away from it. Duffy confesses, yesterday I let Gemma know how I feel about her, and I haven't heard from her since then, and I just wish she'd break up with me already if she doesn't feel the same, because this waiting is torture. I totally have felt that before, yes. But I feel terrible complaining about my paper cut of a problem when you're the one sitting in the hospital bed. His mom smiles softly at him. You know, people always talk about the big things you're going to miss when you're dying, like weddings, grandchildren, seeing your kid win the Pulitzer Prize, but they don't talk about the small, uncomfortable things you're going to miss, like putting on a wet bathing suit, taking a bite into a mealy apple, or listening to your son talk about his hopeless love life. Duffy looks over at his mom and they both chuckle softly. He says, I love you, Mom. And she says, I love you too. He finally got somebody to say I love you back to him. And for a moment, they hold hands. And then Mom finalizes her touching speech. I'm sure this girl will come around, but if she doesn't, she's a bitch, and you don't want her anyways. Duffy sighs. Okay, Mom, at that extra statement, and she returns to her book, and he returns to his fretting.
Back at Cassius Theater, he gets a knock on his door from the backstage manager, informing him that there's someone at the stage door for him. Cash is always hoping it's Maya, and it's always not. And more frequently than not, it's Red Maniacs, super fans of Eddie Redmayne, who just want to talk about him and wear pictures of his face all over their attire.
Mm.
It's not creepy at all.
No!
Cash tells the backstage manager, if it's the Red Maniacs again, we're going to have a talk, man. When he doesn't say that it's the Red Maniacs, Cash goes out to the stage door, and it's... Do you have any guesses as to who it was, Corinne, when you first watched this?
I was 100% surprised by who it was. And I was like, is it Fatima and Bashir trying to set him up on another date? Like, you know, I was sort of
I was like, is it Maya? And then if it's not Maya, is it Maya? And
yeah.
Then if it's not Maya, is it Maya? It's Maya, right?
I was hoping it was Maya. Yeah.
Find out who it is after the break.
Ooh!
But you have to wait till we're back. And we're back! And I bet you're all dying to know if it's finally Maya like Tamra. I know my name and I know how to say it. Tamra.
And Corinne.
No.
Corinne. Corinne and Tamra.
Well, Corinne thought it was Fatima and Bashir at first, which is a better guess than Maya because the build up to it is just hold your breath worthy. Anyways.
I was hoping it was Maya.
Okay. But I was just like, let's be realistic. Unbreak my heart. Yeah, I was. Yeah, I'm going through it with them being apart. I don't like it. And it's not good. It's not happy. It's not where I want to be with this. Yes.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but it is not Maya.
Nope.
It's Ainsley. And frankly, none of us saw that coming. And neither did Cash. They walk and talk down some really quaint side streets as Ainsley asks, so is it a requirement after you get your first big acting gig to wear turtlenecks? Because you look like the Gorton's fisherman. And Ainsley's not wrong. With his turtleneck and black pea coat, he does look like a very fashion-forward sea captain. Cash, however, doesn't really appreciate the very Ainsley comment and asks, okay, did you come here to insult me? Ainsley admits no and says, I'm getting married. Or maybe I'm not, because my amazing fiancé thinks I'm still hung up on you, and I just need to know, was Maya the real reason why you called off the wedding? And gentle listeners, as a reminder, he called off the wedding during the ceremony, which is a lot to process. Cash looks at her, confused and incredulous. What? No! Is that what you think? Ainsley says, what else was I supposed to think? And while I get that flitting through her paranoid head, Ainsley, you gotta ask the questions. Have a talk with Maya, for fuck's sake, to at least clear things up and figure things out. But at least she's trying to clear things up on one side, and Cash does more than clear things up for Ainsley. He also gives her a few points of reflection in case she ever decides to look at the woman in the mirror. Cash explains, you and I weren't right for each other. Ainsley scoffs and Cash continues, you said it! You didn't even know me! That's why I called off the wedding! Maya and I didn't happen until well after we'd broken up, and in the end, she chose you over me anyways. She hasn't even talked to me. She hasn't even talked with me since you found out. She insisted it was the only way to make things right. Ainsley says, I didn't know that. I just assumed. And Cash apologizes. I'm sorry you thought that. I really am sorry for everything. Congratulations on your engagement, by the way. Ainsley admits, he's really great and I've never been happier. Well, that is until I started planning the wedding. She pauses a beat and says, congratulations on the play. Cash responds, thank you. Things are good. I mean, I'm still single and desperately lonely, so I guess you win. And with that, Cash leans Ainsley with some food for thought. I don't know why I just stopped doing a accent with Cash. Cash has such a subtle accent, and it's like an Urdu British mashup that I'm just like, I'm not even going to try.
I never did an accent much with Cash. And part of it's just, you know, he has an American vibe about him.
He does. Very American vibe. Looks like the Gorton's fisherman, for God's sakes.
Uh-huh. Trust your Gorton's fisherman. And now to more somber things. I've entitled this section, Duffy Gets His Own Surprise, just like Cash got his own surprise. Red Maniacs. Back at the hospital, Duffy is looking forlorn next to his mom when he hears Giles' voice say, Mr. Duffy! He looks up to see Giles and Gemma entering the room and excitedly gets up out of his chair exclaiming, You're here! Gemma responds, Well, you hung up on me. Duffy apologizes and introduces Gemma and Giles to his mom, who is cartoonishly playing dead in her hospital bed. I think that you and Duffy's mom would get along well with each other.
Oh, for sure.
Duffy rolls his eyes. Mom, stop pretending to be dead. It's not a funny bit. Gemma responds, Nice to meet you. I thought it was funny, or, well, I will in a day or two. Duffy's mom triumphantly declares, See? And Duffy half-heartedly concedes, So funny. Back at Duffy's childhood home, Giles is settled in Duffy's childhood bedroom, which has very much been preserved through the ages, with the football player wallpaper. That was some intense wallpaper.
I didn't even notice it. I'll have to go back and see it.
Wow. Like, there's just, it's, when I say football player wallpaper, I'm not saying like, oh, there's just a series of like football players maybe throwing a ball back and forth with each other. No, these are like several different illustrated versions of football vignettes that are happening over and over again on the wallpaper.
Oh. No.
I can tell Tam is like, maybe I should get that for the living room.
I'm shaking my head vigorously.
And also there's a poster of Rebecca Romaine Stamos on the ceiling above Duffy's bed. Gemma takes the moment with just the two of them, Giles and her, to let Giles know, "Me and Mr. Duffy are," Giles says, "more than friends?" A look of surprise flashes over Gemma's face and she asks, "You knew?" And Giles starts crying. Gemma hugs him and insists, "If you're not okay with it, we do not need to be together. I knew this was too soon." Giles tearily says, "It's not that. I love Mr. Duffy, but does that mean I love Daddy less?" Gemma says soothingly, "No, no. There is nothing in this world that can make us love your father any less, and he would never want you to be unhappy. It's okay that you love Mr. Duffy. I do."
Aww.
I know, that was such a sweet scene. I was like, pee! Little tear.
And now for another touching moment. Ainsley texts Thrice Bryce, "Have you canceled our appointment to see the church?" And Bryce responds, "Nah, I've been too busy drinking and buying guitars on eBay." Guitars. Buying guitars on eBay. Ainsley asks him to meet her at the church, and when he sees her sitting in the church pews, she greets him and tells him straight away, "I don't want to marry you." He stands there stunned, and she continues, "Let me finish." So he tentatively sits down next to her. She explains, "I already planned my perfect wedding, and really more than anything, it was to prove to me, my friends, my parents, that I loved cash. But I don't need a wedding to prove that I love you. I know that I do." Bryce responds, "Well, I love you too, so what do you want to do?" Ainsley says softly, "Well, I was thinking that we could vow to love each other for the rest of our lives in this place of God." Bryce looks at her intently and says, "I do." Ainsley earnestly responds back, "I do too." Aww. And they kiss, and it's a really sweet one. And when they pull apart, Ainsley asks, "Is it bad to have sex in the church?" And Bryce gets an "I wouldn't mind" look, but they're interrupted by the priest, who they didn't notice standing behind them, who tersely says, "Yes." And they quickly apologize and hoof it out of there, probably to have sex somewhere else.
And this episode keeps on bringing touching moment after touching moment as we see Duffy's mom, the family dog, Duffy, Gemma, and Giles all out in the park, and I am sure the family dog's name is Tony Five. His mom is in a wheelchair out on the grass as Giles plays with the dog around her, and Duffy and Gemma sit on a bench taking it all in. Gemma sighs contentedly. "Giles is so happy here. Back at home, we couldn't get him to go to church, and a few days in New Jersey, and he's wearing a cross necklace." Duffy responds, "You know where it'd be fun to take Giles? The Meatball Museum. It has the most inspirational video there." Only you, Duffy. Gemma looks at him and does a drastic shift of topic as it suddenly dawns on her. "I want to get married." Duffy recoils. "What? To some rich Saudi guy? I knew this would happen." Gemma scoffs. "To you! Get some self-esteem." Duffy is trying to process this. "What are you talking about? A few days ago, you didn't even want to say I was your boyfriend." Gemma answers him. "Well, it was only a year ago that my husband, who I loved, died, and it just seemed like it was all too soon, making it very inappropriate, and I'm always appropriate." Giles smiles. "You do know what all the forks are for," Gemma responds. "But life doesn't care what's appropriate. When you least expect it, your 38-year-old husband dies, or your mother gets ill, and then who cares what anyone thinks? It's in those moments that you need to know who your people are, and you're my people, and that's why I want to get married." Duffy agrees. "I want to get married too," Gemma continues. "I want to do it soon so that all of our people can be there." And she glances over at Duffy's mom, who is enjoying spending the time with Giles and the pupper Tony Five. Duffy agrees.
And in a very unforeseen future moment, we see an Evite invitation to the wedding of Duffy and Gemma on July 11th, 2020. And we all know that very few people were getting married at this time, but we're living in a fantasy future, so there's no pandemic.
Yay!
Duffy writes, "Dear Maya, I know things are still weird, but you have to come because you are one of my best friends, and you're a little bit the reason why this is happening. Duffy." Flash forward to right before the wedding, and Duffy's mom, Duffy, Gemma, Giles, and the pupper are setting up the VA hall with paper chains and shamrock paper plates, and there are American flags all over the place because VH hall, and a couple of life-size pics of the family dog cut out and slapped onto the wedding arbor. It's not quite the look Gemma was hoping for, and Duffy thinks it's a bit broke down looking as well. Giles, however, happily says as he views the room, "Mommy, this looks really good." Gemma mutters to Duffy, "Oh, I raised him to be polite."
I do actually think, though, that Giles thought it looked fabulous. And it did look like a 8-year-old had decorated it. So
exactly.
There you go.
For a kid's birthday party, bang up job. For a wedding, maybe not.
Maybe not. On Ainsley and Bryce's flight to the wedding in a super deluxe first class, because they're just standing there hanging out at a bar during the flight. That always happens whenever we fly, right, Tam?
Every time I see something like this, I'm all, are they like in the first class lounge? No, they're on the plane?
Yeah.
There's a fucking bar on the plane with like nothing around it. It looks like a club. A club.
Which, yes.
No, I don't get it.
I know. I'm like, is it the 70s? I'm confused.
You could take out 5 feet of that fucking bar and give people in the coach seats more leg room. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that's a great idea, Tam.
Thank you.
Your wisdom is the gift that keeps on giving. I appreciate that. Bryce says, I thought you might be nervous seeing Maya again, so I brought you some reading material for the flight. And he pulls out of his pocket a stack of letters for Ainsley to read. She looks at said stack of letters from Maya and says, I thought I threw these away. He thoughtfully responds, I kept them in case you'd want to read them later. And so she sits in her posh super first class chair and begins to read. The next day, Ainsley, Craig, and Zara arrive early to the venue while Duffy looks uncertainly around and Gemma looks intensely uncomfortable. She wants to get married, and she'd like to now, but not with the VA hall currently looking like it does, and certainly not wearing a complimentary black t-shirt with Duffy, both with cartoonish outline of jersey, with his saying, da groom, and her saying, da bride. She actually doesn't intend to get married in that. I just wasn't clear on that at this point. But her just like wearing that period is magic because the Gemma of a year ago would never have worn anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Gemma approaches Ainsley saying, I desperately need your help. I know you can make this room look better. She glances over at Craig and Zara and says, maybe I just need your help, Ainsley. Well, Craig, you could carry things. And Zara gets a look on her face like, yup, kind of what I expected, sadly. Ainsley says, all I need is a craft store and a Target. She asks, what's the closest restaurant around here? Craig pipes in, Hooters, we ate there for breakfast. Zara seconds, yeah, it's a good one. Ainsley is not completely happy with this, but knows she can make it work. Then she asks, okay, what are we doing for music? Duffy offers, my cousin is a rapper named Lil Fuckface. Ainsley would rather hold her phone above her head and play music with the volume turned all the way up versus a Lil Fuckface performance. Then Bryce surprises the group by saying, well, I kind of play the cello. And I don't know where they're getting a cello, but even if they make one out of a trash can and some large rubber bands, that would be better than having Lil Fuckface perform at your wedding. I'm just saying this all.
You don't know that, Corinne. You haven't heard Fuckface's next album. It's a banger.
Wedding jams. Well, that's wedding music. Five.
Flashing forward several hours, the VA hall has pretty much been deflagified and de-paper chainified. Those suckers were everywhere and everybody's helping set up. Then Maya arrives. She says to the group, sorry I'm late. And Duffy enthusiastically greets her while the rest of the room falls silent. Duffy says, why don't you go over and help Craig with whatever he's doing. Craig gives him really Duffy eyes and Duffy quickly pivots. Okay, how about Ainsley offers tentatively, she can help me. And the entire group visibly relaxes with that statement. Maya cautiously approaches Ainsley and asks, so what are you doing?
Ainsley explains how she's folding the napkins, and Maya tries it for a half a second and then drops the napkin she was holding and says, "Okay, I can't do this. I'm so sorry."
Aww.
Ainsley cuts her off. "No, you've apologized enough. I read your letters." Maya is visibly surprised. "I thought you threw them away." And Ainsley admits, "I did, but then I read them and two things became very apparent to me. One, you love me a lot."
Mm-hmm.
Maya responds, "Yes, I really do." Ainsley continues, "And the second thing is, you love Cash." Maya tries denying it. "No, I don't. I swear I haven't been in touch with him at all." Maya interrupts her once again. "No, I know. But I have, and your love is soulmate level with him. And I know that because the only reason why you would have hurt your best friend in the entire world is for something undeniable like true love. And can I please get a high five for how fucking mature I'm being right now?" They high five each other and then tug tearily,
aww,
both of them confessing how much they've missed the other and how much they've stalked each other online. Then Ainsley asks, "You ever think of calling Cash?" And Maya sadly says, "No, I think that door's closed." And she focuses on folding her napkin. A couple of things. First, a very funny thing that Ainsley said at the top of the movie is when she received one of Maya's letters, Bryce pointed it out to her and said, "Hey, here's a letter from Maya." And she looked at it and said, "We don't read junk mail." And then threw it away,
oh,
threw it to the
gosh.
Side. And secondly, why didn't Ainsley tell Maya that Bryce kept the letters? I think that would have been a sweet little, like, tidbit for
seriously.
Her to be like, "I did throw them away, but Bryce kept them and he gave them to me on the flight on the way over here." Maya would be like, "Bryce, you're my boy. Like,
yeah.
You and me, thank you, bro." But
yeah.
No, she just like, "I didn't read them and then I did."
Yeah.
I'm like, and it. And nothing else you want to say after that? No? Okay.
Yeah. No. Duffy went from being my least favorite to Ainsley going to being my least favorite.
Also, what the fuck was up with Duffy and Craig in that room? Like, if it were me and Maya and Ainsley, like, finally reconciled after a year, I'd be, like, all up in that front hug. Like, come
yeah.
on, bring it in. I want a group hug.
Group hug,
we're
group
finally
hug.
Reunited and it feels so good.
I completely agree with you. There should have been a group hug. And also, Ainsley should have said that her man saved the letters and she had a very illuminating flight on the way over. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I am so glad that Ainsley said, "Maya, you helped me fold napkins," and they had the conversation that they needed to have and they reconnected in a meaningful way.
Yes.
Because I do not like besties torn asunder personally. It's a big pet peeve of mine. I'm not into it.
Oh, okay.
Later, the room is looking much better and Ainsley steps aside from her friends to make a phone call to Cash. Cash is in his dressing room and Bashir has come along to see him in the play, swearing, "This time I won't fall asleep." Right. Bashir immediately falls asleep on the couch as soon as Cash picks up his phone and starts talking to Ainsley. Ainsley tries to convince him to come out to New Jersey to the wedding she's at and talk to Maya to tell her how he feels. But he declines, saying Maya isn't interested and he's got a play to perform every night, so he's busy. He asks, "Who's the wedding for anyways?" Ainsley glances over and sees Maya and Duffy standing behind the wedding cake and she is hit with inspiration. Or friendspiration. Huh? She says, "Maya's wedding. Maya's getting married." Cash's heart races at this thought and he says in a more panicked voice, "Who's she marrying?" Ainsley quickly calls out to Maya and Duffy, "Smile!" and clicks a picture, sending it to Cash and telling him, "Duffy, Maya and Duffy are getting married." Now Cash is full on panicking. He sees the picture of them standing behind a wedding cake together with Duffy's New Jersey shirt that says, "Da groom."
Da groom.
Cash exclaims, "What? They're terrible together." Ainsley agrees. "I know, that's why I'm calling you. Cashy-wan, you are our only hope."
She does not say that.
She should have said that. Cash is now fully on board. "I'm calling in my understudy. I'm on my way." He hangs up the phone and wakes up Bashir. "Change of plans. You're taking me to the airport." Bash is just relieved that he doesn't have to sit through Henry IV Part 1 again.
I love how game Bashir is.
Yeah.
He's always just like, "I don't care, bro. Let's just go. Do you have tickets? No? Well, I don't care." But Cash does manage to get a plane ticket because Haroon, his father, uses his power of persuasion on the lady at the ticket desk. And the lady with the, quote, fake service dog gets kicked off the full flight so that Cash can have a seat. However, as Cash gets onto the flight, he passes the woman who appears to be very blind and has a full-on guide dog. He mutters to himself, "It's fake, it's fake, it's fake," because that's the only way their conscience would let them get away with kicking somebody off a full flight. Even though it's not, but he's grateful to have a seat so he can save Maya from a future of Duffy. As soon as the plane lands, Cash pushes his way through all the people getting their luggage and waiting to get off the plane and sprints off the plane and into a waiting cab. However, he gets stuck in traffic, so he throws some pound notes at the man in the car who is not very happy that he's been giving, quote-unquote, fake money, because he didn't get to change it over to American money, and hauls his ass down the busy, sizzy streets. The busy, sizzy streets.
The busy,
city streets. The wedding ceremony has started, and Maya looks stunning in a black dress. Ainsley invites her to sit next to her, and as Bryce plays cello music, Duffy pushes his mom in her wheelchair down the aisle. Giles walks down the aisle with the family pupper, and next comes Gemma with, I guess, her dad, some random guy.
Yeah.
Some of Duffy's students are also at the wedding, thanks to their chaperone, Tabby. Aww! And Andrew and Tony, too, are there as well. As Duffy sang his vows to Gemma and looking deeply into her eyes, he's suddenly interrupted by a loud voice yelling, "Stop! Stop! Don't do this! I love you and I know you love me too!" Gemma turns towards Cash, who is now standing in the aisle, and says, "I most certainly do not!" Realization washes over Cash that Maya's not getting married, and Ainsley looks a little sheepishly at Cash when he finds her in the crowd of guests. Duffy orders, "Sit down, dude! How many weddings do you have to ruin?"
Apt statement.
Cash apologizes, sorry, and moves to the back of the room. Maya looks at Ainsley, and Ainsley's expression is like, "Yep, I did a thing."
And back to the wedding, Gemma clears her throat and says, "Caleb, falling in love with you has been one of the sweetest surprises of my life." Craig whispers to Zara, "Who's Caleb?" Zara, with an audible roll of her eyes, explains, "That's Duffy, your best friend's first name." Craig is confused. "I thought his name was Craig, so that's why we call him Duffy." And, gentle listeners, I'm here to explain it. He is called Duffy because until hooking up with Gemma, he has been a complete and total Duffy.
Fair statement. Fair statement.
And, you know, honestly, if he switched over to being called Caleb at this point in time, I would not complain because his transformation would be fully complete.
It sure would.
Either that or Tony Six. One or the other will do.
After the ceremony, everyone is in the second part of the room for the reception, and Maya and Cash approach each other. Maya says, "I like what you said to Gemma. I'm sorry it didn't work out between you two, though." Cash agrees, "Yeah, it was kind of a waste of a trip." Maya smiles coyly. "Well, it doesn't have to be. You could be my date." Cash responds, "I don't know. I hear weddings are a great place to meet women." And they kiss. And it's a good one. And it lasts for like 5 minutes while all the other wedding guests dance around them.
Mm-hmm.
The end. Yay! The really end. The super duper end.
Mega happy ending end.
Mega happy ending. And since it was a mega happy ending, Corinne, do you think we need to go over the relationship ratings?
Five dry kisses
all the way around.
Do you want to say anything else about Four Weddings and a Funeral?
Good job, Mindy Kaling.
Yes. And the other writers who we just don't know like we know Mindy. Our good friend.
Sorry.
And also, I loved how this series let the characters grow and develop over time and their relationships changed as they went. And I felt it was a very nicely developed, limited series. And I enjoyed the personal relationships that lied therein.
They had good character arcs and there was some surprises in there, which you're usually like, I know it's gonna happen. I didn't see that.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. So thank you, Tam, for joining me on this ride. And what's our next ride gonna be?
Our next series is going to be Purple Chrysanthemum, according to Corinne. No, our next series is going to be The White Lotus, which is a murder mystery with some sexy intrigue intermingled throughout it. And it's got Jennifer Coolidge in it, who's an absolute delight. So I might kick myself in the butt for deciding to do this series, but it's a little bit it's something different. But we already started, you know, this new season was something different when we did a series versus a movie. So we'll see what happens.
And we're doing the first season.
There are two different seasons to The White Lotus, but they're like standalone stories. Mm-hmm. There is one universal thread between the two, but it's not prominent. And we'll see what happens. We're doing the first one. So
yeah, well, Tam said, which season do you want to do? And I said, let's start at the very beginning. A very nice place to start.
And who knows? It might be a banger and I'll be like, let's do season two. Or it might be something else and me be like, we are fucking never doing that again.
Yeah, just like when we tried to do Hallmark Mysteries. We were like,
Oh, hell no. Yeah. Hell to the nah.
That was not worth it. But it'll be interesting seeing what doing a limited series is with shorter, you know, shorter time spans and stuff like that. Yeah. So we'll see if we can make this work or not. I'm intrigued. I've never seen it before. And I was like, Tam, I will do it for you. Because I'm not going to do Bestie Betrayal. I'll be there for you. These three words I swear to you. When you breathe, I want to be the air for you. I don't really, though. I'll be there for you. So, if you have anything you'd like to say about White Lotus. Is it called White Lotus?
White Lotus. It's White Lotus.
Thank you. It's our new choice of program for Weddings and a Funeral. Our bad accents, whatever. You can reach out to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or on Instagram and Facebook, all at onedrykiss.
And as always, if you could find the time to rate or review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we appreciate you stopping by and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time.
Didn't we already do Love Actually?
Yes, we did. Yeah, I watched it for a second time and I was like, wow.
This is bad.
I was like, I had forgotten the whole like going to America and the models all sleeping in one bed.
No. Business. Corinne, no. Come back to me. Okay, come back to me. Okay. We're in this series. Don't go there.
Yes, thank you.
Because I'm like, are you going to fuck with me? Are you going to fuck with me right now?
Do you want me to kill? Do you? Oh, where is my British at? Where is my British at? It was good, the sentence before. It was a perfect Marcus.